Good to see everyone out this morning. We're especially delighted to have you if you're visiting with us. We invite you to come back at any time that you can. This morning, we're going to talk for a few minutes about a subject of distractions and what we should be dealing with on a daily basis. We'll read a couple of verses to start. Deuteronomy 34:1. Now Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo to the top of Pisgah, which is opposite Jericho, and the Lord showed him all the land. So what you see here is the northern edge of the Dead Sea on your left, with ancient Canaan in the middle and the right of the screen. On a clear day, I'm told, you can see Jerusalem from there. Jericho would be right about in the center of the screen, right across the River Jordan. Verse 4, this is the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. This is what Moses saw over the Jordan as his last act for God this side of heaven. Here's another picture of the promised land. This is up from Tiberias. There's a mountain behind Tiberias that I can't remember what it is, but this is looking out. If you see there on the right, you see the Sea of Galilee and the lush farms there and how fertile that it is. So this is the Sea of Galilee that would also be a part of the Promised Land. And then you see an even better picture here of how fertile and well-watered and so forth that the Promised Land was. So when they were to cross the Jordan after 40 years in the wilderness, they were looking to inhabit this land, which had been described to them as the land that was flowing with milk and honey. That's what the spies said some 40 years before that. Verses 5 and 6, so Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord, and he buried him, he being God, buried him in the valley of the land of Moab. So looking from Pisgah is what we're going to talk about this morning. We're going to discuss perspectives, and that's what I think is important from this lesson, and how we are distracted from looking into eternity or looking into the Promised Land. We have our Promised Land just like these Israelites did. Ours is not so much different from them and what they were looking at and seeking for the Promised Land. We'll do a short review of Exodus here in just a minute. But my question this morning is, how do we let the world distract us from this? If we have a Promised Land that is a part of our eternity and we believe that it is, how do we let what happens here distract us? I would think that no matter where you are, if you look to your left and right, front and back, there'll be someone, likely more than one, that's struggling with issues of this life. It might be issues that involve family. It might be health. It might be finances. It might be spiritual issues. Chances are good that you'll never recognize or be aware of another's issues. The most that we can often do is just to pray for others and pray for those round about us and the ones that we come in contact with. So here's what got me to thinking about this. My wife still subscribes to People magazine. I look at it because I can see what my grandchildren are naming their animals after and things like this. This is not really what I would call the pinnacle of reporting, but I do the crossword puzzle in it. And so not too long ago, in the last couple of weeks, I'm reading this article. And let me preface this by saying, and this is my assumption, celebrities, athletes, politicians on both sides of the aisle, not just the ones on the one that I like, they're pretty much out of the real world. They don't really live in the world that you and I live in. So take into account what I'm going to say about that, that, you know, up the front, I think that most of these people are just a little bit different. We have our ups and downs and defeats, good times and bads, and the importance that we place on that depends to a large degree on how we're looking at the promised land. It's very possible to let day-to-day issues overshadow what is important, and us looking into the promised land here as we compare our difficulties to others to justify our actions. You know, I've got this problem or I got that problem, and so did this person, so I should be okay about it. So, with that in mind, look at this picture. This is something, if you don't recognize her, that is Gisele Bündchen. And she's a supermodel. She's now promoting a new book that is called Lessons, My Path to a Meaningful Life. Let me get that one more time for you. Lessons, My Path to a Meaningful Life. She's quick to point out that things can be looking perfect on the outside, but you have no idea of what's going on the inside. So let's put her life into perspective for a moment. Do you remember the Charlie Rich song, Did You Happen to See the Most Beautiful Girl in the World? A lot of people think this is her. She was a supermodel at 18. She was on the cover of Vogue at 18. She had a record-breaking $25 million contract at age 25 when she began dating this guy. You might recognize him. She goes through a couple of years of dating him, and she breaks up with him, and she is married to this guy. You might recognize him, too. That's Tom Brady, the New England quarterback that was a part of the Deflategate thing. Several children later, combined net worth just shy of $600 million, annual earnings of about $70 million. Financially, there would be less than 1,000 people on this planet with the resources that this couple has. So you figure what percentile they're in. So I want to read you something, lessons from life that come from her, and I gave you all of that information just to put this in perspective. You know, this is not your average everyday. You didn't meet this lady at the grocery store. This is a quote from Lessons. It was the weekend, and I was in my apartment in New York, probably a $10-15 million high-rise. I'd booked a massage to help me relax. Now my panic attacks, that's what the doctors were calling them, had been going on for nearly 6 months. Suddenly, in the middle of the massage, I just couldn't take it to be there anymore. I couldn't catch my breath. Making some excuse, I got up and went outside onto the deck. It was a beautiful night. There was the river. That's going to be the East River she's looking at. The lights in the distance and as much air as I needed, but I still couldn't find my breath. I felt like everything in my life was going to kill me. First it was airplanes and elevators, then tunnels and hotels and modeling studios and carts. Now it was my own apartment. Everything I had become a cage. I was like an animal trapped inside, panting for air. I couldn't see a way out. I couldn't stand another day of feeling this way. The idea swept over me then. Maybe it will be easier if I just jump. Suicide. It'll be all over. This is a lady with the world on a string at 21 years old. And she says, maybe I should just jump. And when I think back, and this is from the lessons about this 23-year-old girl, I want to cry. I want to tell her that everything will be all right. And so you continue with that. I've not ordered the book, and I'm not going to, but it's not what you would expect. You would look at this lady's life, and you would think, well, you know, she's on the top of the world, but apparently she wasn't. She's enormously wealthy, famous boyfriend, later married to a superstar quarterback, luxury apartment in New York City. She enjoying a massage when she discovers that life is so bad she wants to jump off her balcony and take her own life. So how could that be? She's got all that the world is offers. She says that appearances are deceiving, and she'll make millions telling people how dysfunctional she was here, because this book will do a lot for that. So as noted to start there, she's not really in touch with reality. And I'm not sure what the masses will do with the book. The point here is that all of these physical and material things do not make for happiness. This lady has everything that there is, and she's not happy to the point of wanting to commit suicide in her early days. She's better now. She's married. She's got the kids and all this. So this was just a low point in her life, not unlike a lot of us have, except, you know, we don't have all those things. Material blessings will never fulfill our needs. If we dwell on the physical life, there will be no eternal joy or happiness for us. So, what we want to talk about today is, how have the people of God dealt with things like this. So we're going to look this morning at the Israelites that were entering Canaan to get them up to where we are here after being led to the threshold of the promised land by Moses, to help us keep perspective on where we are and what would be expected and what God's children have done to help us from being distracted from these day-to-day issues that plague us all. We're reminded of the peril in Judges 2:10, after the Israelites served the Lord during all the days of Joshua and the elders that were with Joshua, there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord, nor yet the work which he had done for Israel. So, looking to Pisgah. The conquest of the land was promised to Abraham hundreds of years before. It was confirmed by Joseph. You recall Joseph talking about this, the hero whose misfortunes had saved the chosen people, and the pinnacle of the Jewish people before Christ, that would be Moses. So how'd this take place? Well, we start here with Joseph being sold into slavery by his brothers, and when you get to chapter 50, you see a godly man's explanation of what happened. And this, we all remember the account. Genesis 15, the brothers who have wronged Joseph come to him begging for forgiveness after Israel has died. In normal circumstances, they would have been in great peril. Joseph brought the family to Egypt about 1875 B.C. So verse 19 tells us what, this is one of my favorite Old Testament scriptures right here. Verse 19, chapter 50 of Genesis. Do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about the present result to serve many people alive. That is the nation of Israel. And that's exactly what happened. We continue down a little bit further in verse 24, and he says, I'm about to die. This is Joseph talking. I'm about to die, but God will surely take care of you and bring you from this land to the land which he promised to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Swear to me that you will carry my bones up here. And that would happen in the Exodus in about 1445 B.C. So we see here that Joseph is responsible for why they're here, and when it gets time for him to die, he goes and tells them that they're going to be brought up out of there to this promised land that we saw the pictures of just a minute ago. So Exodus begins the account of with the birth of Moses and his adoption by Pharaoh's daughter, accounting for the first 40 years of his life. That's where he was in Egypt. Followed by 40 years in Midian and his return to begin the last 40 years of his life for the return to Egypt. The 10 plagues, the release of the Israelites, and the time of wandering. Chapter 12 describes the ordinance of Passover. The Israelites are free. They're on their way to the promised land. Chapter 13 accounts the route that God gave them, people to go to the Red Sea and the division of the Red Sea there to escape the Israelites. We move on to chapter 16, and it talks about the grumbling of the people and the provision that God made for the manna and quails to sustain them. So God had gotten them out of Egypt. They had been released from captivity. Now they're out here, and they got to have food, and they want meat. And so they grumble, and God makes provision for them with the manna and the quails. We all are familiar with that story. Chapter 17, the people are thirsty, and they confront Moses and God, and God provides the water from the rock at Horeb. This chapter also gives the account of the battle with Amalek and God's assurance that that was written down, that their memory would be utterly blotted out. King Saul should have read that before he did what he did. And apparently he was not up on his history there. But anyway, this is where that account is found. Chapter 32 tells us the golden calf that was created when the Israelites could not reason the delay of Moses coming down. And so the issues are exaggerated while they're out in the wilderness here because of the sheer number of people. It's one thing for one person to be hungry. You know, you got one baby that cries, everything's fine. You got 50 babies that cry, you got a different story altogether. This is exaggerated because you've got some 2 million people that are here. So we have just the sheer number of Israelites, probably well over 2 million people. Food, water, and impatient issues are all magnified by the number that are involved here. Numbers 13 tells us of the spies that were sent into Canaan. And as we know, two were ready for the conquest, that's Joshua and Caleb, while 10 were afraid. 14, the people complain and groan against Moses again. You know, Moses and Aaron say, take us back to Egypt. You know, things were not bad. We want to go back there and stay in slavery the rest of our lives here. Verse 20, surely all men who have seen my glory and my signs which I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness, yet have put me to the test these 10 times and have not listened to my voice, shall by no means see the land which I swore to the fathers, nor shall any of those who spurned me see it. That was a result of the fact that when the spies came back, only two said, we need to go in here, and all the Israelites said, no, we don't need to. And so God told Moses and them at this point that they're all going to die out there in the wilderness. And so thus begins 40 years of wilderness wandering. They thought they were going into the promised land soon, but it just didn't happen out. 40 years of wandering that ends with Moses looking again from Pisgah into Canaan. The only leader that God has provided them with is about to die. Joshua will begin leading Israel in the conquest of Canaan, the promised land. And the inhabitants of Canaan are expecting them. They've fortified their cities to the extent possible to resist the conquest. So no one would say this has been an easy journey for them, nor would it be easy to accomplish the task that is about to happen, and that is the conquest of Canaan. So I've been talking about this for about 15 minutes. Does it tire you just to listen to the account of their lives? I mean, I just kind of get worn out just standing up here talking about this. Think about, we just spent a few minutes recounting what had happened. Can you imagine the lives that these people led? Can you imagine, you know, how tired they must have been for the last 40 years? Every morning they've been getting up and eating the manna and eating the quails. And that's 40 years. That's the life of, anyway, that's a long time. It's a long time that you've got that. And then can you imagine Moses? He spent 120 years of his life. He's now 120 years old looking over here, and think of all that he has done, all he has invested in God's work over this period of time. The people have been taken from slavery to the Jordan over this 40-year period of time. But Moses, you know, Moses spent the 40 years in Midian and the 40 years before when he was back in Egypt. So we're back to where we started there with Moses on Mount Nebo of the top of Pisgah looking down into the promised land. So, have we just quickly reviewed some history, or is there something that we can take home with us today? I want you to just think for a minute about three lessons that are here. One, good and bad, no matter what you think, happens all around us. We have that. God's people have been plagued with this and that forever. It's, you know, there's always been worldly distractions. No matter how good those around us appear to be, there's probably issues that are being faced by them, by many of them at any given time. Worldly distractions, sometimes even blessings, take us from what's important in our life here on earth. God's people have never been pampered. That's never been the case. You won't find that anywhere in the Bible, or absent of strife or discord. Perhaps the easiest part of their lives would have been during part of the reign of Solomon, but God's people have always been distracted, and they've always had strife and discord. 2 Timothy 3:1, Paul tells Timothy, the young preacher, but realize this, that in the last days difficult times will come. Timothy is not going to change just because Christians are here. There's nothing unusual for the followers of God throughout the ages. Second, God's promises are timeless. We need to consider that when we are distracted on a daily basis. There's always something that you can get up and say, well, you know, I've got this problem, I've got that problem, I have to deal with this. God's promises are timeless. Time means nothing to him. There was over 2,000 years that passed between the promises to Abraham and the fulfillment through Christ. Think about that. 2,000 years happened. So the fact that something happens or we are led away for some short period of time is really meaningless to God. We are, you know, we are not looking in a time span that God deals with, and it really doesn't matter to him, time. And then third, God's people look toward eternity. God's people find strength looking toward eternity. As Solomon says, fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person, for God will bring into judgment every act. In 2 Timothy, again, Paul writing to Timothy, verse 4 and verse 8, he says, in the future there's laid up for me this crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award me and all who love his appearing. So we're going to look forward to that reward and to the reward that has happened. And Paul says here to Timothy that it's available to everyone. Peter, in the last of his writings in 2 Peter 3, verse 11, since all these things, he says, that is, all the things that tie us to this earth and the pleasures and perils that accompany them, will be destroyed in this way, that they're going to be burned up. What sort of people ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening for the coming of the day of God, because of which the elements will be destroyed by burning and elements will melt with intense heat. But according to his promise, we are looking for new heavens and a new earth in which the righteous dwells. Moses was looking from Pisgah. We're looking into the promised land of eternity in heaven with God. Is that where you're looking this morning? Are you looking into the promised land? We should all be reflecting on it daily as our guide to our lives to make sure that we get to heaven after this short life is over. I pray this will remind us and help us consider our lives in the context of eternity. If you're not looking into heaven and you've not begun that journey today that brings you into a right relationship with God, now's the time for you to render obedience to the gospel and be baptized for the remission of your sins so that you might begin that journey. If you've done that and have fallen away and you need the prayers of the congregation, then now would be the time for you to come forward. Won't you come forward if you have any needs as we stand and sing?